I wanted to talk to you about the stuff that you've been doing and the thing that you started working on now, which is Happiness with Sam. Mm-hmm. Explain to me what it is and what the idea of it was to start with, and how did you get involved, or how did you start it? I have a list of questions in front of me that I'm looking at, so.
That you didn't share with me first. Uh-huh. Well, I guess it initially started because my team with Body is called Happiness Unleashed. And that came about, and that name came because 1 year for Summit, we were asked to just find one word that would describe our journey. And I said, happiness. Because I felt when I first started putting my health first, which started when AJ was deployed, I sunk every energy I had into working out, eating really well, reading books that helped my brain, going back into my Bible more and all that kind of stuff to solidify just my mental health and my physical health a lot, because he wasn't home anyway, so I had a lot of extra time to do that. And what I truly got out of it was a lot more happiness in all aspects of my life, and it just kind of radiated out. Being newly married, like, our marriage was really good. We can talk about things. We, you know, if we have a conflict, we can resolve it. Like, we don't have to sit there and fight with each other and get passive aggressive or, you know, make weird comments. Like, it just gets resolved.
Okay, so given the fact that we're related and we come from the same family, and we know the history of this family, and we know that the family tends to be, or the patriarch of the family tended to be, a very negative and bullying type of personality. How do you, so when you started this, or when you got married, you were 24?
Yes. It's been almost 8 years. Yes.
Okay. So how do you... What were the tools that you used to change that?
A lot of it was like personal development books. I think they get a bad rap because at a bookstore they're called the self-help section, but they're really good and people shouldn't discount them.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean you need help.
No, but I mean, growing and getting better every day, like, isn't that what we all want? So that helped a lot. I got out of a job where I was being harassed every single day to a job that I had really good coworkers who actually supported me, so that was helpful. My husband supported me. I was living just with my husband and myself, and then by myself for 9 months. So I think part of that is that you can really control what you consume. And in that, it's what you're consuming all around you, what you're hearing, what you're seeing, who's around you. And because I could control that, I could make sure that while I was doing that personal work, if I didn't have the bandwidth for other things, then I just didn't insert myself into those situations.
Okay.
So I think being kind of removed from it honestly helped too.
Okay. Okay, so so fast forward to you were doing that stuff and you were surrounded by people with Beachbody. Mm-hmm. And then what prompted you to start your own thing?
I just felt like I could do more. I have a very eclectic array of educational backgrounds, being healthcare as my bachelor's degree, a certification from Wartburg Seminary for youth and family ministry, wanting to do more with that. And just, you know, I have a personal fitness certification and, you know, all of this weird stuff that nothing really goes together other than the fact that it all helps with my personal health. I just wanted to do more, but I didn't really know how to do that in the traditional sense of what people would look like or look at if I said I want a job that did more of what I enjoyed doing. Beachbody's great. I'm still partnered with them. But even then, I felt like I could do more. And they're slowly coming up better with their mental health side of things. They have a therapist actually in their company now who's doing programs for us, which is cool. But it still felt like there was something missing, like the fitness, the nutrition, that's great. But there's this whole other side of it, which is your heart and your head, that needs to be added. So I just thought, why not create it, basically?
Okay.
And go from there. And that's where the journal first came out of, because I had been doing that practice already by myself for 6 years. I've got journals that I'd fill and then, you know, push aside after they got filled, because I didn't find one that was simple enough. Every gratitude journal I'd look at, it was, well, here's your gratitude journal, but here you have to keep track of your habits here and this here, and like it's all this extra fluff that I didn't want.
Yeah.
Or I was already doing and I didn't feel the need to write it down. Like, I don't need to write down my water intake. Like, I'm always thirsty. I get plenty of water in now. Like, I drink a gallon a day. That's not something I need to track anymore. So whereas that was maybe helpful in the beginning, I didn't want all of that extra. So I just created basically a blank slate for anyone to be able to do what I started with, basically.
Okay. Tell me about the, I don't think this will pick it up, but.
My daughter in the background.
Tell me about the gratitude part of it, and how did that start with you? And where did that come from, and where did you get exposed to that at first?
I would say that a lot of that happened. If she pounds it here. A lot of that happened when AJ was deployed. It was the first time I'd ever lived by myself. Our roommate that we had recently just moved out. So we went from four of us living into this two-bedroom apartment to us being married to just me in this two-bedroom apartment for what would have been a year. And I had a lot of anxiety, to the point where I was talking to my physician and making, you know, exploring other options, like what did I need as far as possibly, you know, a therapist or a counselor or maybe even medication, like how do I do all of this? And that's when I was reading and diving more into things biblically too, because that's always been a part of me and my faith. And I just kept seeing like gratitude is such a prominent role of things. So I started trying to focus more on that. Scientifically, if you're in a state of gratitude in your head, your body can't have the fight or flight negative response. There's no room for it. So if you focus on it, you can't have all that, you know, that negative feeling come into your body. So I started focusing on that and writing down three things every day that I was grateful for. But I made sure that it was...
Was this something that you just came up with?
I just started doing it. Okay. Yeah. Because I didn't actually start seeing a counselor till much later. And so I started that, and it helped. Like, it decreased a lot of my anxiety between that and eating well and... honestly exercising, because it's a good endorphin rush. It was just this culmination of everything that really helped. And by the time...
And how long do you think you did that for before it became a natural habit?
Oh, a while. It takes a while to build those habits to where you can just do it without really thinking too much about it.
Can you remember that? Like, do you remember thinking in the beginning, like, oh, I'm going to try this, and then 6 months later you kind of look back on it and went, oh, I kind of do this naturally now?
Yeah, it started to work very naturally, and I would say it was probably, yeah, like 6 months to a year even, where I started noticing like a huge difference. My panic attacks virtually went away, to be honest. I didn't have much anxiety, or I could turn that worry into something else, which was really beneficial. And then it didn't creep back in until I was postpartum with Reagan. It hit me really hard with like postpartum anxiety. There's postpartum depression, but there's also postpartum anxiety.
Yeah.
And it took about another 10 months for that to clear when I had it with her. But I haven't had it with the second kid, and I haven't had it since.
Okay.
So now when I get a panic attack, it almost feels like I had them so often that like I knew exactly what to do when I used to have them. And now I have them so infrequently that it does stop me where I'm like, what do I do now? Yeah. So, which is nice, I guess. But yeah.
You know. No, and the interesting part about it, when I first found out that you were doing this, I was like, I love the fact that you're doing it. And I was like, great, because I went through the same kind of process. And what happened was, when I said that I would take the job in Japan, I had no idea what I was doing. I had asked the president of our U.S. subsidiary if I could go to Japan for a month because I wanted to find out what happens over there. And I wanted to find out how we could work with them, because we would ask them for stuff and then it would come back 6 months later or a year later, and it was nowhere near what we had asked for. So there was no real communication, and there was no dialogue. And so I wanted to improve that process. And so then he came back to me and he said, hey, yeah, they want you to come, but they want you to come permanently. They don't want you to come for a month. Would you do it? And I was like, sure, why not? You know, I mean, how many times do you get offered an opportunity to do something like that? So, and I can remember this very clearly, because I literally took two suitcases and moved to Japan. And
quite a bit more with us.
Yeah, well, and part of it was I didn't know, you know, I didn't.
You know what you need.
Yeah, and I didn't, you know, I mean, I knew that they were going to go and get furniture for me and stuff like that, and so I figured, well, I could just live very minimally, you know, and so I literally took two suitcases full of clothes and food, and that was it. And so I get over there and found out that I wasn't really wanted. The guy who had brought me over was a Spaniard, and they had moved him out of that position, so he was not the top of me anymore. And they put a Japanese person in there, and this Japanese person was kind of angry and was really not happy that the foreigner had been sent over. And so I sat down with them the first day. It was literally the first day that I was supposed to start working there that they had made this change. And so I sat down with them and I said, hey, I realize you didn't ask for me to be here. I said, I'm here and I'm not going away. I'll help you in any way that I can. And he kind of, okay. And he kept me at arm's length the whole time. Well, I eventually replaced him. So all of that to say that when I got over there, the first 6 months, maybe even the first year, was really, really hard, because it was like everything was different, you know. The whole work environment was different. The people were different. The way that I interacted with people, and the fact that most of them couldn't understand the language that was coming out of my mouth. And so I had a lot of anxiety. And it was probably about 3 months into that I started this thing where I was like, okay, I'm going to fight through this, and I'm going to figure out a way to do this. And so the first thing that I could think of was, every night when I would be going to sleep, I would sit down and I would go, what are three things that I'm grateful for today? Mm-hmm. Even if I had the shittiest day ever, or like nobody would talk to me at work, or I had no idea what was going on, I was like, there's at least something. Mm-hmm. And it was hard in the beginning, because you go,
it can be really
what are
hard.
The three things?
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
There's still days where I'm like, I didn't do that yet today. It's nighttime. I want to have a better day tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. And I'll sit there and I'm like, okay, today was really crappy with the kids. Like, what was it?
You can find three something, small things. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that became a habit with me and it actually was therapeutic, because it would help me fall asleep and things like that. And then it turned into a dialogue of where I would start and say, God, I'm thankful for this today. Mm-hmm. These three things.
Yeah,
and
it might have been as like prayers.
Easy as I drove to work and I came home and I didn't have an accident. You know?
I feel like that's pretty good. You're driving on the opposite side of the road.
Yeah. Or I had a conversation with somebody and they understood what I was talking about and was able to do something actionable with it. And it helped me survive through that process. And I think it was probably around the same time. It was 6 months or a year into it where I all of a sudden realized, gee, I just kind of do this without thinking about it. And even to this day, and this is now 7, 8 years later, every time I lay down and I go to sleep, I sit there and I think. And there's nights where I'll lay awake for 3 hours thinking about other stuff, but I start with that and it kind of brings
brings it back down. Yeah, we do something similar now with Reagan when she goes to bed. So it's not what you're grateful for, it's what was your favorite part of the day, which is kind of the same.
No,
it's
but
the same
it's a
piece
start.
In a four-year-old's mind.
Yeah.
And it started because we didn't know how to calm her down from her tantrums going to bed for a while.
Yeah.
And that immediately would get her to just stop and be in her state, and then she'd fall asleep. And now we just keep doing it.
Okay, so I'm going to change the subject.
Okay.
I have no idea what this podcast is going to be about. My idea is that it would be about business, entrepreneurship, struggles with that, how people get into entrepreneurship, and what it's like. So what have been the biggest challenges of starting a business on your own?
I guess just like part of it was starting it, because I had the idea, but I didn't, like, other than that, it was how do you go about doing it? Like, the idea is great, but you have to figure out how to actually get there. So that was hard. So I spent quite a bit of time researching how to self-publish.
And how did you do that?
Google.
Okay.
Researched how to self-publish, and then within that researched, you know, what was the best out of, you know, the 10 different options that would pop up. Formatting.
So talk about that for a little bit. Of part of it was you creating the journal and self-publishing that. How did you find the best way to do that? Was it as Googling, how do you self-publish a book?
I literally Googled, how do you self-publish a book? Yes.
Okay.
That was the exact Google
And did you
Google
find
search.
A website that said, step by step, this is what you do?
Yeah, there was quite a few of them that came up, actually.
Okay.
And then the one that just seemed, I mean, you can go and self-publish through, there's certain publishers who will actually allow self-publishing. And it just kind of depends on how you want to go about it, because some of them, there'll be costs associated with it, or with that cost, then you also have to buy so many copies of your book right away if they're going to print them, and they're not going to print them as a one-off each time someone orders and things like that. So I had to take all of that into consideration, like how much stock did I want? We move around all the time. I can't just have 1,000 books in my basement. It's just not practical for our lifestyle.
So what did you decide on? You decided on Amazon?
I decided on Amazon because they will publish as they're purchased. I pay for, basically that it comes out of the cost of the book. So I don't have to like pay them individually, if that makes sense.
So when you sell it?
When I sell a copy of the book, they take off the cost of publishing it.
Okay.
And it's a 70-30 split. So I get
70%
royalties. They take 30.
Okay.
Which was also what I found was the highest margin I could find.
Okay.
And
how's that process with Amazon been? Was it difficult? Was it hard to navigate? Was it
easy?
No,
it's pretty easy.
Okay.
It's in the, what is it called? Kindle self-publishing or something.
Okay.
And
how long did it take you from the start of the idea of wanting to create the book, including writing it and laying it out, to getting your first copy of it?
Probably 3 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I wasn't having to do hundreds of pages of text, though, in terms of like a,
yeah,
a biography or a novel either.
But, and you had told me this before, you laid it out in Word originally?
I laid it out in Adobe InDesign.
No, but originally you started in something.
No, I started in an InDesign. It was just the wrong size, so then I had to reformat the sizing.
Okay.
page by page.
Okay, so everything was laid out in InDesign.
Yes.
And then so I formatted it all. Into Amazon.
Yeah. Okay. So in InDesign, it was just a blank page. I put in every element that's in there by hand, and then had to have it formatted, did the covers in a separate InDesign document, and then I just had to export them all as PDFs to upload them.
Okay, so in you doing this, was your intention or your idea to become a millionaire by self-publishing a book? And no,
definitely not.
Okay, so what was your original intention with it?
My intention was just to try to help others doing the same process that really helped me. You know, people, you see it on social media all the time of, well, this worked for me, and like tons of people followed and do it. And I think that that's really great, but I also think that there's other ways to get that knowledge out there besides social media. And at least with my generation, there's a huge movement off of social media currently happening. And a lot of people aren't using it in the millennial generation. I mean, there's still plenty of people who obviously are. It's still working. But so part of it too was diversifying and really seeing if I can reach more people and be more helpful in different avenues. So having a website, I have my newsletter that goes out. That's more of a blog style newsletter. We have the journal. I've been slowly working on more of a kids edition. It's a little bit more challenging to think of the aspects because what we do like with my daughter is just so simple, but kind of a kids edition because I've actually had people ask me, well, you have this for adults, but what about my kids?
Yeah.
One of my friends in Iowa just the other day asked because her kiddo's therapist actually suggested doing something like this. So then she was looking for a journal for him for it. So I think that there's definitely a need for it, and people just don't always know where to turn to or start.
Yeah.
So
is your do you have people that you've talked to that have self-published or help support you in this, or is this all been you?
It was just me, mainly because I try not to listen to outside opinions, I basically didn't tell anyone I was doing this until it was already done because I didn't want to be talked out of it.
Yeah.
So I just didn't tell anyone because then no one could talk me out of it. It was just me hyping myself up in my head and it was going to go great.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I did.
So how long ago did you start this process? Has it been about a year now?
Yeah, probably. I was like really thinking of it and
okay.
Yeah.
No, and the funny part from my perspective when we first started talking about it is that I had no idea that you were doing it, but then when I heard about it, I was like, "Oh, I think the idea is great and I think that you can do it."
Uh-huh.
And
that's kind of the support that I've gotten, so I probably would have had more support had I shared more about it.
Yeah, but there's something to be said for not
scared of
hyping
you
up ahead of time and having somebody
negative aspects. Exactly. I don't know.
Ironically,
it's like walling myself off from all the negativity.
The thing that could have killed you in your positivity business is negativity.
So I was just walling myself off from it, you know. Which I guess isn't the worst thing in the world, but I've had a lot of support now. One of my friends self-published her own cookbook and it's amazing. She's an amazing chef, and so she's now helped me by giving me some connections to other publishers that she's used, because she did not go the same route that I did. She's published with a different actual publishing house.
Okay.
So she's giving me contacts there, and she's getting into some of the local stores in the area, so she's giving me contacts that way too, which is fun. So there's been a lot of support now from it.
Okay, so in your mind, what does this look like 5 years or 10 years from now?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. You've thought about it already.
Guess.
You're just afraid to say it out loud. It's okay.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd love to be able to do what I enjoy and help others with it. Whether that means other books, I love the journal. I think it's a great starting point. One of the things that I've been randomly writing on, but not actually doing anything with, so at this point it's probably like incoherent from page to page, is writing a book that would help other military spouses, especially since the route that we've taken in the military is so abnormal and not traditional to many others.
Yeah.
And the fact that we lived overseas. Like, there's just so many things that aren't shared enough, or there's still...
There's no guidebook when you start it.
There's no guidebook. Not for the spouses, not for the families that are, mirroring into it. And, there's always the saying, well, you knew what you were getting into. It's like, no one really actually does. You fall in love because you
Nobody
love that
told me
person.
Ahead of time.
You don't fall in love because they're in the military. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
TRICARE is not all that it's cracked up to be. but like it, so to use my own experiences to help others, I think is just really cool. So I guess that's what I'd like to be able to do with it.
Okay, so in 5 years or 10 years, does that look like you speaking, in other words, or forming groups of military wives and helping new ones come in? Is there an opportunity to create an organization that helps them support themselves when they start? A nonprofit or a...
Possibly. I mean, they have... There's groups at every base that do help, especially like new spouses and stuff. But I think part of that is you don't really know about it. Like, it's not like...
You have to find it.
Yeah, you have to find it. So it's not as easy to find as some people would think.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me... How many years are we into active duty now? I'm trying to think. It took me 3 years just to find PWOC. Not knowing that they had one at the base we were at in Missouri, but I just never heard about it.
Yeah.
I had no idea what it was. And that was a huge part of my life in Germany. So, I mean, I think having things that are more readily available. So, yeah, maybe creating something completely new to hopefully combat where the other ones fall a little short. I mean, the military does try. It's not that they don't care about family, but they certainly don't care about us as much as they do the soldier.
Yeah.
Rightly so. That's where their company is. I mean,
yeah.
The military is one giant company. So you have to care about your physical employee, not the family members, more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, possibly that, or, I mean, speaking to help people realize that they're just not alone in it, and there's people that are willing to help them. One of the things that always bothered me pretty much at any base we've been to is that you'll have a few spouses here and there that are like, oh, well, I can't, hang out with them, or I can't come to that organization because you mix enlisted and officer spouses. And it's like, they're a person.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Why are we
you
putting
can talk
another...
to anybody.
Yeah, I'm like, why are we putting another title on this? Yes, it does in some scenarios make a difference. If I have a barbecue in my backyard, I can't only invite this one family if they happen to work underneath my husband. Because it would look like favoritism. I would have to invite that entire section of people. Okay, fine. But what I do on my own time when it's not associated with my husband, and if that's just a friend of mine, it doesn't matter. So I mean, but that's, again, like, versus, like, there's a few very specific examples, but there's not many where you have to actually, like,
be rigid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last thing I'm going to ask you, because we're almost 35 minutes into this, believe it or not, is talk about what it's like to live a positive life. And I know that's a very broad
it is.
Statement, but...
I think a lot of people view it as blind optimism, and it's not. It's not that you don't think bad things won't happen or that you just ignore all negativity in your life. It's that when you see it or it happens to you, you can better deal with it because you can find the little piece of it that can turn out good. You focus on that little piece and you therefore handle the problem with a perspective of it doesn't have to shatter me. That good enough?
Yes. Anything's good enough, but... And from my perspective, I think what happens is it snowballs.
Yeah.
Because you start with one little thing and then it becomes, and I, you know, last night I couldn't sleep with everything going on. Mm-hmm. And I think back and I go, who would have ever thought that I would be where I am today? Right. And even given the bumps of, you know, when I was asked, well, when I left Japan, I left because the Japanese person that had been brought in to manage the company at that point didn't want any foreigners there. And I could understand that, and I could see that.
It's part of their culture, too.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And so I saw the handwriting on the wall and said, hey, here's the things that need to be done. I can do them from the U.S. Can I go back to the U.S.? And that gave them an out of them saving face of, we don't have to fire this guy. We can just send him back to the U.S. and he can, you know, do whatever.
Yeah.
And then from that, it snowballed into finding the right people to work for and accomplish something. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in my whole life, I look at it and go, right now my work is at the best that it's ever been. And I'm doing other things outside of that as well. You know, I'm able to travel. My work allows me to travel. I'm able to start businesses on the side and not have it conflict with what I'm doing, you know, as a day job.
Right.
And so, like, even last night I was looking at it and just going, it's been a long time getting to this point, but I'm thankful and I'm grateful for the whole.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that it does snowball over time. I think that you start small with something and you start to block off the constant, everything sucks.
Right.
This is bad. This is bad. And you get to the point where you start to, you don't ignore it, but you...
You can see it and just, like, kick it aside.
Yeah.
You're like, well, yeah, you're bad right now, but you'll figure yourself out.
Yeah. It has less of an impact on you.
Yeah.
Than if all you're doing is focusing on those negative things all the time. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to say?
No.
No. I've thoroughly exhausted you. Thank you for doing this.
Of course.
Appreciate it. For being the first one to get through it with me, and we'll see where it goes.
Sounds good. Thanks.